Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, and today on The Local Take, we're previewing our Sunday, March 1st event at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. This event begins at 2 p.m. that day and will feature a panel discussion about restorative justice. Our next guest is Artis Bronson. Bronson is a member of the City of Atlanta Restorative Justice Board. We've talked with Artis about this issue, particularly as it relates to young African-American men. Artis, thanks so much for joining us again today.
All right. Thank you, Kiplin. Thank you for having me.
So, Artis, some folks, when I say restorative justice, they ask me, what do I mean? Could you give us, what's your definition of restorative justice?
Restorative justice is about, is a concept of allowing an offender to regain the trust of society by going through certain steps, certain processes, certain evaluations, certain means of making amends, so as they can move on past their offense and be restored in their rightful place in society. If we weren't born to be inmates, we weren't born to be the incarcerated. So, but however, because of the fact that some of our circumstances may have sent us there, that doesn't mean once we are out, we have to stay there, mentally or physically.
And right now in the system, it really does seem that you stay there. It becomes a challenge for people to get housing, to get education, to vote. And when you can't do those things, that means that you're not a productive citizen in society. So is that the main win for us with restorative justice?
It's a win for society. It's a win for the individual. A lot of times, you know, when we talk about individuals that have fallen off the off path, unfortunately, some of these individuals never were taught to do it the right way. And therefore, you can't rehabilitate something that someone has never learned. So what we have to do is understand that in the old days, they say you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That does not mean you don't wash the baby. That doesn't mean you don't clean the baby and correct the baby, but you cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have to get beyond the incident. We have to find out how we got to the incident and then take steps to ensure that we don't have a repeat of the same incident by someone, by that same individual.
And currently, you were saying that we live in a society where everything is punitive. We have been doing this long term. At this point in time in the U.S., we are incarcerating more human beings than any other country. Sometimes I wonder how we got there, but even more, how do we begin to dismantle this? How do we stop this?
We have to look at it more from a holistic standpoint. We already see that what we have been doing for the past X number of years is not working. The only thing it's doing is taking people off the street, incarcerating them, warehousing them, then putting them back out to victimize again because they have no resources. They have no allies. They have no one that understands the hows and whys. So we want you to take a holistic standpoint, which we do with the City of Atlanta's Public Defender's Office. We take a holistic standpoint. We disregard the old assembly line justice. Next person up, how many years you get, sign off, see you later, until you come back and do it again. We have to understand how did the individual get to the point of being in a situation. Are they homeless? Where is there some addiction treatment that we can get for them? Do they need a second chance because they've been incarcerated and have the scarlet letter of a felon across their foreheads? What is it and how can we get past it? So we, one, help that individual feel good about himself or herself and they feel that they're worthy to be among the free. And then we have to get those of us that are free to be willing to embrace and give these individuals a chance.
With the Restorative Justice Board, what are some of the tools that they use to help offenders not become repeat offenders?
One of the tools that we use is for an individual that's had a drug conviction for possession. Well, they're using for a reason. So they are mandated to get drug and alcohol evaluation, And based upon that evaluation, we decide exactly how much more additional treatment they may or may not need. Someone has been caught short shoplifting. We have them take a shoplifting course. And so they understand the peripherals that, and the negative consequences that it only creates for other people when you shoplift. Disorderly conducts could be an anger management problem. Different things, parenting skills. So we have a myriad of things that we can do and that we employ to try to get to the root cause of the situation, and then we try to correct it from there.
So prevention is the way. And now when I was growing up, I just even remember that in prison there was a big thing about rehabilitation. So that people went to prison, but they came out with a skill. That may have been, you know, some 70s kind of hunky-dory thing. But when did that change? Because now it seems like people just go to prison.
Well, it changed. I don't think it changed. I think we stopped camouflaging the fact that we're not rehabilitating. We stopped using the word to sway the public views. And it's the bottom line. If you take a can and you sit it on a shelf, it sits there until it rots. Plain and simple. And most prisons, a lot of prisons do have prison industries, which is money makers for the prison and the states. But the key is a lot of the skills that those individuals are learning, they cannot use in the real world because they have a scarlet letter of a felon. And even to be a cosmetologist or a barber, such condemnation can create a problem for you with employment. So if someone goes to learn to weld and they want to become a certified welder, but the Secretary of State saying because you have a convicted felon, we cannot license you, then what good is that skill?
So in a country of second chances, we have just disregarded people who enter the system, and there are no second chances. Not many.
Very few. Very few. Now, I don't want anyone to believe that we are not placing the blame where it lies, because at the end of the day, we all have to make choices in our lives. And we, as a result of these choices, there are consequences, whether they be good consequences or bad consequences. My opinion is that once someone has paid their dues to society, whatever, if the judge sent you to prison for 5 years, you went and did your 5 years and you came home, at some point we have to allow them to become a part of society again and not walk around with a sign that says, I went to prison, so I know you won't hire me. I know you won't give me a chance. I know I can't get into college. I'm a product of restorative justice. I call myself a walking billboard for restorative justice. So I know it can happen, and I know there are people out there that can help, but we need more individuals that want to help, more individuals that's willing to employ, more individuals that are willing to treat. And we need to have real conversations about the ramifications that we're creating in our society by not allowing this to happen.
Because when we don't allow this to happen, as you've mentioned, it usually means that that person is going to end up right back in the system that we're paying to maintain them in the system, which was one of the things our earlier guest talked about.
It's a revolving door. It's like you walk out, someone waits to say, the guard's at the front door saying, okay, I'll see you when you get back. And we have a system right now that perpetuates that. You have, and you know, with the economy being the way it once was, granted it has picked up in recent years, but when you had an economy that was in rock bottom, and now you couple that with an individual with a stigmatism of having been incarcerated, it's very hard. Who are you going to give the shot? It's very hard to decide who you're going to choose. One thing we have to incorporate, I don't remember exactly who said it, but there was a quote, and the individual said, you cannot put as much emphasis on how it will affect you if you take time to help someone. You should put more emphasis on how could it possibly help hurt them or affect them if you don't help them. So we live in a me, me, me society. We live in a punitive society, and we have to get out of that.
Because in the long run, we're punishing ourselves because we're destroying human capital that could be contributing to our supporting our, you know, jobs that need to be done, paying taxes so that we've got more money in the coffers. But if you've got this weight of folks who can't reenter society, that they're going back into a system where we're maintaining them, then that becomes its own challenge. That becomes its own defeat.
It's a huge issue. I mean, you can take an individual right now in the state of Georgia that is on probation. The judge saw fit to give that individual probation. If that individual is even arrested for another charge, that is a violation of his probation, whether or not he is convicted of the charge he was arrested on. So what you just did, you just took a justice system that you say you're innocent till proven guilty, and you turned it up on his head and said, no, because you're on probation, you got arrested. That's a violation of your probation. You send them to jail, they sit, they lose their job, they lose their homes, they lose their family connections, and then you say, okay, you've done 60 days, we're going to reinstate your probation. These are things that just don't make sense, and if someone really pulls it all apart and looks at it, there are ways to correct it. But first of all, we have to get individuals that are concerned about really correcting it and not getting on TV and saying, we have reformed the criminal justice system in Georgia. Well, what have you done, Governor Deal? What have you done? Because it's not like less people are going to prison. It's not like the ones that are going to be given any real hope for tomorrow.
So we have gotten ourselves into this ditch, and we've got to get out of it. And I know many people listening thinks that this only impacts African-American men, but that's really not the case. It's in the prison system. It's much more of an economic challenge. And a lot of people in our state in Georgia who live in rural areas, whether you're black, white, or brown, it's very easy for you to get caught in the system, to be in probation, to have fees, and like you said, to get caught in this kind of cycle that you can't get out of it.
Race does play a part, and I'd be the first one to say that. However, it's as much about class as it is about race. It's about the who can you... Your justice is only good as the money you're able to spend. Let's just be completely honest about it. That's all it's about. And it should not be that way, because that's not the way the system was designed. And, you know, Lady Justice, she wears a robe and a blindfold. She sees. She has 20/20 vision, and she definitely can tell the color green.
So, artists, I know why restorative justice, and you've been on the show before, but I want you to explain again to our listening audience why restorative justice is so important for you and how it has helped you.
Restorative justice is a passion of mine because of the fact that prior to getting life right, I made a lot of bad decisions and put myself in the line of fire of the criminal justice system. As a result, I ended up doing 62 months in prison.
As a first offense, correct. Full scholarship at 18, and which brings me to judges. Why aren't our judges more lenient? Why don't they take every case as a case? How did we get here where judges now don't seem to make any alternative except punitive?
The bottom line is it goes back to class. It goes back to the haves versus the have-nots, and it goes back to someone given an opportunity. I don't know what I did in my life to deserve the angel that came into my life and said, okay, I'm going to help you help yourself, and therefore you'll be able to help society going forward. I don't know what I did to deserve it, but I'm glad that it was instilled in me, and I'm glad that the people have stepped up to help me get past my the collateral consequences that come with having been a convicted felon. But we also have to understand that we have to stress education to our children, because with at least with an education and some respect up for yourself and others, you do have a shot to overcome when you've fallen. Without those, you have just compounded your issue drastically. The judges, when I'm in court every day, and one of the things I see is, especially those individuals from the African-American community, when they go to court, they're in there by themselves. There's no mother, there's no father, no brother, uncle, no one showing support. So no one has actually ever came out and told me this, but I honestly feel there's a mentality of no one else cares, why should I? And that's why should the prosecutor care? What offer he makes you? Why should the judge care? No one else is here to stand beside you to say one positive word other than someone you may have just met 10 minutes ago when you're in the holding cell before you came out into the courtroom. And that is the process. That's where the system is broken. And that is not a problem of the criminal justice system per se. That is a problem with society and the out of sight, out of mind concept. And as far as the prison population, ironically, the fastest growing prison population in this country right now is no longer the African-American male. It's the African-American female between the age of 18 and 25.
That is just amazing to me. I mean, it's bad enough when it's young men, but now to incarcerate young girls almost at the same rate is really insane to me. But now, artists, I get mad listening to your story. You say that it was a blessing in disguise.
My situation was definitely a blessing in disguise. I don't think that anything that I did warranted 62 months in prison. Quite frankly, it did not. However, it forced me to get a grip on myself. It put me in a perspective that I knew I didn't feel I belonged there, but I understood the fact that I was there for actions that I had done, I wasn't, but I was in a situation, take it or leave it. It's going to get worse. That's mm-hmm. the position I was placed in. And that's the position a lot of our young men are placed in. One charge becomes 10, and it's like, okay, you either take this or I'm going to do something different, and it's not going to feel as good. So I credit the upbringing of my mom and my dad and my grandma. And I never, even throughout everything I was going through, I never let my chin touch my chest. I never gave up. I never dropped my head. I stood proud, but I stood determined to turn it into something positive because it was so traumatic. It had to be something good on the other side.
And the good on the other side is that you're now an attorney who can, I would imagine when you have conversations with young people who have gotten caught in the system, that the conversation coming from you is received a little bit differently than if the conversation was coming from another attorney who had never been in the system.
A lot of the conversations that I had, they look at me, they see a suit and they see a tie, and they hear what they consider to be a certain amount of intellect, and it's closed ears. And I then have a tendency, especially with young men, I carry a picture around in my phone, and that picture shows me in a cap and gown, one half of it. The other half shows me in one of my mugshot pictures. And what I use that to emphasize to them that I'm not judging you because everyone has at some point or another done something that they're not proud of. Just about everyone I know has done something that could have possibly landed them in prison, depending on the judge and the day and how much money you were able to pay on who you knew or didn't know. Well, when I show them this picture and I say, I was you, young man, you cannot sit here and pull the wool over my eyes because I probably tried the same thing you tried right now. So I'm not here to judge you, but I need to know how we got to this point so I can figure out a way to help you. Then once they see that picture, then once they hear that real conversation, they tend to open up and tend to tell you a lot more of what's going on with them so you can then analyze what's the best course of action to keep you from having to see them again.
I wish everyone would work to keep working to not see these kids get caught in the system that just chews them up and spits them out. I mean, this is, we need these young people to be productive citizens in our country. We need these young people, their thoughts, their creativity, their intellect, to move our country forward. And warehousing them is not the answer. And warehousing young men, warehousing young women is just not the answer. So I've asked, how did we get here? How do we dismantle the system? How do we move forward? What does a holistic legal system look like? And how do we get to that system from where we are now?
It looks like the City of Atlanta Public Defender's Office. And I have to give props to that because they work hard at it. It looks like the City of Atlanta's community courts, which deals with, substance abuse issues, these things, so to try to get help for these individuals. It looks like Judge Sloan for the City of Atlanta. It looks like Judge Gundy with the City of Atlanta. It looks like Rosalie Joy with the Public Defender's Office, and even the prosecutors, they get it. That's what it looks like. The City of Atlanta has done a wonderful job creating an atmosphere where we try to assist the individual, at the same time keeping in mind that there may be a victim involved, so we cannot turn our back to that individual either. And the best way we can help a victim is to help them from becoming a victim again. And we do that by dealing with the individual on a one-to-one basis, and we throw out all aspects of assembly line justice, where everyone is just a name, a number, and a sentence. And we ask the hard question as to, how did we get here? What can we do to keep you from returning?
Artists, I want to thank you for coming today, and I want to remind everyone that you will be there on Sunday, March 1st. We could talk about this forever, but I'm glad that we have seemed to have gotten to a place where everyone understands that we need more solutions.
Definitely. It's an honor to be able to talk about it. I use myself as a poster child for being one of the dumbest kids on the block about some of the mistakes that I made. But I also want to also use myself as an individual that you can pick yourself up off after you've fallen, and you just can't give up on yourself, and you have to accept a hand when someone's offering it to you.
Artist, thank you so much. We appreciate what you're doing, and your story is just magnificent to me.
I appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening today on The Local Take, as we've previewed the upcoming Sunday, March 1st event at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. This event begins at 2 p.m. that day and will feature a panel discussion about restorative justice that includes today's guest, Sherry Jefferson and Artis Bronson. To find out more about this event, I encourage you to go to WCLK.com, where you can also listen to these interviews on demand. If you have an appropriate nonprofit organization you would like to see featured on The Local Take, just give us a call on our WCLK Community Engagement line at 404-880-6211. Leave us a voicemail and we'll get back to you. For producer Rob Maynard, I'm Kiplin Primus. Thanks for listening to The Local Take on WCLK, Atlanta's Jazz Station.